Hello and welcome to another edition of Habitat. I'm your host, Erica Butler. Today on Habitat, we feature a conversation about the future of buses in Halifax. Well, not just buses, actually. Sean Gillis is the co-chair of It's More Than Buses, a public advocacy group organizing since 2011 around the issue of making transit better in Halifax. Recently, It's More Than Buses released their answer to Halifax Transit's impending network redesign. After campaigning hard for the transit department to take on the redesign, It's More Than Buses is not slowing down. They've put together a map showing a high-frequency transit network that could replace our current route network, increasing the speed and reliability of the system. I called up Sean Gillis to explain a bit more about the It's More Than Buses plan. Thanks for joining us on Habitat, Sean.
Great. Thank you for having me.
So, this new network design that It's More Than Buses has just released uses just the current budget for Halifax Transit. Is that correct? You're not increasing the amount that would need to service this network design?
No, we aren't. And actually, the network that we've shown with our high-frequency corridors and our feeder routes is actually, our estimate is 75% of current resources. So on top of what we'd drawn, you could use another 25% to service different areas, to provide different types of express services maybe. So there's actually more service in the pot that we didn't show.
Hmm.
So it gives you an idea of how much waste is actually in the current system. It's pretty astounding.
So the map you guys have released, all that service, that would mean, and the frequencies that you described, that would only be using 75% of the current budget for Halifax Transit.
That's our estimate, yes.
Wow. How is that possible?
Well, there's two big things that we've done. The first is, if you look, we're going to say Barrington Street. We have two routes running at 10-minute frequencies all day. So that's five-minute service. If you look currently on Barrington Street, there's 23 routes on Barrington. So there's one big thing. We've removed overlaps. So that would be roads like Barrington, the bridges, Roby, Gottigen, places like Portland Street and Dartmouth. There's enormous amount of overlap, so that's very wasteful. And the reason there's overlap is we're trying to give almost everyone a direct route to downtown, to Cogswell area, to Scotia Square. So at some point, they all just have to overlap. And so we've removed that and said a lot of people are going to have to transfer to get to downtown or other important hubs. The other thing we've done, we should be clear, is if you look at our map, right now a lot of routes run very deep into low-density suburban areas. And so they have to wind their way through a difficult road network for transit, and they also go to areas that aren't really dense enough to get high-quality transit like we're talking about. So we've taken them out of our proposal, and that's potentially where another 25% of the service that we talked about could go, kind of filling in some of those coverage gaps. But we think that it's really key to point out that the core network should run on major roads. It should really stick to the major areas because that's where most people are traveling, and that's within a good distance of a lot of the population. So that's the two ways that we get our efficiency, if you will.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one thing that people will notice immediately when they compare the current network with this proposed network is that there is less coverage. I mean, there's some communities like North Preston, for example. They have a coverage right now. They have a bus that actually, I mean, I was sort of impressed at how frequent it goes there.
It's not too bad, yeah.
But it's left off this proposed network.
Yeah.
So what do you say to those current riders if they come up and say, well, I'm not on this map anymore. What do I do?
No, it's a really good question. We're not saying those areas shouldn't be serviced. Another area right now that is serviced, that will get service under pretty much any proposal, Timberley. So we're not saying that these areas don't get service.
Right.
What we're saying is that pot of 25%, we're going to have to draw the lines, whether they're half-hour frequency or 20-minute frequencies or an hour, we're going to have to draw them out, extending them. Now, one thing to point out, Preston, for example, there's a Preston route and there's also a Cherrybrook route. Right now, they wind all the way across around Forest Hills Parkway, down Portland, and then they eventually make their way down to Scotia Square, like every other route in the city. So one thing we might say is, well, yes, you definitely need service, but how about we bring that only to Bridge Terminal, where you've got connections to everywhere else in the city? And again, we get rid of some of that redundancy. Timberley, on the other side, we might say, yes, right now you have service all the way to downtown, but what if you stop at Mumford Terminal or Lacewood Terminal and get onto a much better service right there? So part of the reason we didn't draw all of the service, because we wanted to focus on the really high ridership areas. The other reason is that when you get into routes that are a little farther afield, you might talk about them as coverage routes. And you'd say part of this is to deliver a social service to those who need mobility. And when you're doing that sort of exercise, you really do have to consult with the community more and find out what their needs are. And as a volunteer organization, we don't really have the resources to do that. So the high ridership routes have, you can think of them at a much higher level. The really community-based routes, you have to get a lot more info that we just weren't able to do. So there is more service. We're not saying don't send buses to areas that aren't serviced now necessarily. We're saying we have to think about what we want to do with them. They're not the same as this high-frequency concept we're doing.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you? It's an interesting point. So basically, you guys have focused on what makes most sense in based on sort of principles and the structure of the city for the downtown cores of Halifax and Dartmouth, and that's using 75%. So the other 25%, you're purposefully not deciding where those resources go because you don't have the capacity to do that.
We don't have the capacity to do that, and we really believe that that is a very important community conversation to have. What is the goal of low ridership service? Is it getting people into appointments to be able to go shopping, to give... I don't think it should really be to get people to peak hour jobs in the downtown, because when you provide low-frequency service or slow service, it's not really a super desirable type of service.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, if you decide that it's only going to run in peak hours and it's only going to run to get people downtown, it's not really designed to do that, and nor should it be. So, you know, let's not pretend that that is the goal. If people use it to get downtown, great, but I don't think it's really the primary purpose. And the primary purpose of our network, in a lot of ways, is not only downtown Halifax, but downtown Dartmouth, the north end of Dartmouth and Halifax, Woodside, Mumford, Micmac, some of these very important areas in the city, to get people, you know, on their important trips throughout the day. So work, school, right in the core of the city. That's really what we're going for.
Now, the proposed network lists routes with 10, 15, and 30-minute frequency. Is that all-day-long consistent kind of service?
That's all day. That's all-day service, yeah. So, I mean, we haven't put an outer boundary on that, but through peak hours and then all day. And part of the reason that our network doesn't have huge amount of coverage is that there are very few areas in Halifax, Dartmouth, and kind of the surroundings that really do require all-day service of that type. So that's why we're saying this is here all day. And if you look at some of the areas kind of peripherally that we serve with 15-minute service, Mount St. Vincent University, kind of that stands out as a lot of people are going to be going there for classes, for work, all throughout the day. Similar thing with Micmac Mall, Woodside, Bears Lake Industrial Park. So we've tried to find the anchor areas on the outside and terminate our high-frequency networks there. And then everyone along those corridors does get all-day frequent service. And a more specific example, if you look at Main Avenue right now, we do have a bus running at 15-minute frequencies all day up Main Avenue. The Route 2 runs up Main Avenue right now. It's one of the busier routes in the system. And the Route 4 runs down Rosedale. So collectively, you could say there's enough buses to have 15-minute service. We're going to put them on Main Avenue and really give them a higher quality service, because Fairview does have very high ridership. And you can get down into the center of the city and then transfer out on that network. And there's a similar spur to Spryfield and a similar spur up Portland, in Dartmouth, etc. So the grid part of it is confined to the the urban core, old city of Halifax and the old peninsula of Dartmouth. Sorry, the peninsula of Halifax and the old city of Dartmouth. But the long routes connect across the region to get people into that core and move around much easier once they do that.
Right. So there's a central grid, and we have connections to that going farther afield. Those are the feeder routes that you're calling.
No, well, some of them, I guess the feeder routes, those, the 30-minute absolutely do that. But if you also look, the grid, if you're looking, just look at the peninsula here, if you have the map up, the grid aspect where routes actually overlap each other kind of ends at Mumford. And in Dartmouth, the grid aspect where routes overlap kind of ends around Penhorn, Main Street, Micmac Mall, and Highfield. So in that area, you actually have a place where you can transfer between lines to kind of move across those areas. In our network, just if we start at South Center Mall, for instance, and you travel down, you hit Mumford, you can get off and transfer there, but your route does continue across the region up Quinpool Road to Cogswell and then over to Dartmouth. So you don't have to transfer to get onto this network, but you can transfer to get different lines and different destinations in the network. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense, I guess?
I think so, yeah.
Okay.
There, right now, there are no 60-minute or more frequency routes. Explain the idea behind having this frequency, this, you know, like having 10 and 15-minute expected frequency on all these routes in the network.
Well, the 10 and 15-minute frequency on its own is just very useful. You allow people to, without consulting a schedule, know there's going to be a bus within a reasonable amount of time. So if you use just a single line in the network, it still benefits you having more frequency. And two really good examples are the Route 1 and the Route 7, the two buses in the system which already run frequencies similar to that all day. Now, the Route 1 went to 10-minute frequencies a few years ago, and ridership jumped by, I believe, double digits. That's already on the busiest route in the system. So people value frequency. They will use frequent service more often. They're more inclined to use it. The Route 7, a couple of years ago, it went to 15-minute service all day, and ridership jumped 20% on that route. And that's, again, one of the busier routes in the system in a built-up area. Not a huge number of people moved into that area, but 20% more riders. So the first thing is that frequency by itself is valuable, even if you're only using one route. It's a much better service. The second thing is that with our multiple transfer hubs and transfer terminals, when you have high frequency, if you're changing lines, your maximum wait is 15 minutes. Your average wait is going to be 7.5 minutes. So you have the ability, without coordinating transfers, just with the buses running as they do, to transfer from any line to any other line in any direction on the frequent network. So for people going cross town or people traveling to these peripheral areas, absolutely is going to speed up their trips enormously, because right now they just don't have the ability to transfer quickly to get to one of those areas. So those are the two big advantages of frequency. And you really use transfers so that you can remove redundancies and just up the frequency in other places. So that's one of the main ideas. The half-hour frequencies, because they're feeder routes, they have to coordinate with the high-frequency network. So if you're going to plug in at Mumford or at Lacewood or at Woodlawn or Portland Hills to get on the high-frequency network, those transfers would actually have to be timed appropriately so your feeder bus comes in and syncs up with the main line, because otherwise you could have a half-hour wait, which is really inappropriate. But the current network with mostly half-hour systems, if you're trying to coordinate buses, well, which one's the important one? You know, you got 4 or 5 half-hour buses coming together. Which one are you trying to get people on? So this, we have a hierarchy. The high-frequency network, 10 or 15 minutes, is the dominant network. Everything else kind of is scheduled around that. So you arrive and within a quick time transfer to or from the high-frequency network to the connector feeder routes. And that's what we are trying to do with the frequencies. In some cases, a lot of these routes, if we went with this view, you'd have to have higher frequencies in rush hour just to deal with the demand. If you look at routes across the bridge, like, you're just going to have a very high frequency to deal with the sheer number of people coming across. So these are kind of the base frequencies to give you that flexibility to transfer and just the dependability of knowing a bus is coming fairly shortly.
In the materials, you talk about pulse points versus branching.
Yeah.
And pulse points is, I guess, explain a bit about that terminology. You're referring to branching being the way our current system works versus pulse points being the new system, or how does it work?
Okay, there's I guess there's two types of transfers you can do. You can have uncoordinated transfers, which are just you get off a bus and whichever one comes picks you up. They're not timed to transfer. And within the high frequency network, when you have either 10 or 15 minute frequencies, you can just do that. People will tolerate that amount of wait for transfers. So the second type is the pulse point idea, where you have time transfers. And so if you come to, for a specific example, let's just say Portland Hills on our map. So you can see we've got a blue line, and it terminates at Portland Hills, and then there's two green lines going off of it. So the green lines only run every half hour, and the blue line runs every 15 minutes. So if you simply had the blue line come into the Portland Hills terminal, if you simply had the green line come into the Portland Hills terminal whenever, then people could wait up to 15 minutes to get on the high frequency network, and coming home they could wait up to half an hour because they just might get off a bus and have just missed that feeder service. So the pulse point idea would happen at places like Portland Hills, and what it says is that all of these feeder routes come together at the same time of the transfer point as the high frequency route, and everyone just gets off the bus, they head over to the other bus, and then the buses go on their way. So that allows you to run lower frequencies without having huge waits for transfers. Branching, let's stay with Portland Hills. So instead of the bus ending at Portland Hills, what you could do is you could have one bus continue along one route, and the next bus would continue along the other route. So you'd have half the frequency. So it's just another option to get people from the high frequency network to lower frequency service. So branching, you don't have to change a bus. What it doesn't allow you to do, you can't transfer within connector routes that way because you still have the really long wait. So it's two options to lower the frequency as you kind of get into more peripheral areas. We've chosen pulse points for ours mostly. There are a couple of pulse branches in ours, but we've chosen predominantly pulse points because the longer you run a route, the less reliable it becomes. And you also have to match up when you branch. If you have one half of your branch is really busy and one half of your branch is less busy, then you kind of have a mismatch there. So
mm-hmm.
We can go back if that doesn't. We can add some more detail to that or some clarification if need be.
Yeah, it's interesting because it does seem like one of the big drawbacks about the system now, I'm an infrequent user, so I am mm-hmm. not using a predictable route, which makes it that much harder to use the system, especially because buses are late a lot.
Absolutely.
Right? And everything is thrown off. So, I would argue that I rarely take this. I mean, even though I think we have a single ride system right now, I rarely take the bus without having to transfer.
Well, you're not alone. 40% of riders surveyed by Metro Transit say they currently transfer in the system.
Right. So
and you hear horror stories of people waiting 42 minutes for a transfer, or 37 minutes, or up to an hour in some cases, because they just missed that transfer window.
So, can this system help buses be on time? Is it possible to design that into a system?
You have to build infrastructure to do that. The biggest issue with buses in the city are generally what we've called the choke points. And so the McDonald Bridge, the McKay Bridge, Fairview Overpass, Bears Road, Mumford Road, and the Armdale Rotary. So this is where most of the traffic in the city happens, and Magazine Hill, the final one. So the reliability of the buses falls apart because to get anywhere useful, you have to cross a choke point. It's all well and good to stay within Dartmouth. That will help some people, but a lot of them want to get to Halifax and vice versa. So what we're saying, if you look at the map, we have this kind of hatching on some of our lines. And we're saying, if you want the reliability so that buses run on time, on schedule, at the speed they're supposed to, we absolutely need to start exploring putting in infrastructure or refitting our infrastructure to give the bus a way past this traffic especially. So you can look at transit lanes. You can look at transit lights to let people through the intersection. You can go with transit queue jumps, they're called. They're short little lanes at intersections that the bus comes to the front of the line and then pops ahead at the light. And finally, if you're really aggressive, you can look at full-on bus or transit ways where the transit is kind of its own fully separated roadway.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't have a lot of space to do that in Halifax, but if people are talking about the rail cut, they're looking at that because it's grade separated. You know, you have your own reliable place for transit to run. So to a certain extent, I mean, if you got rid of the number of routes, it would help a little bit because you'd have fewer routes to kind of worry about clumping up. But really, it's about giving transit a way past traffic. If you want the reliability, routing can only go so far with that. So,
mm-hmm. And that will take two things. I guess one, it will take giving up the space. So, you know, traffic and, well, I mean, ultimately HRM council, but also all the engineers that work in traffic and transportation at HRM will have to be on board with that idea, but it's also going to take money. So, and that would,
yep.
This would be, and did you guys go so far as to make estimates about like what kind of capital expenditure we would need to throw down to actually, I mean, I know this operationally, like on an annual basis, you're only using 75% of the budget
yep.
to run this network, but how much capital money would we need to put down in order to really make this system work?
See, that we haven't explored too much because we haven't set out really super specific demands about our transit priority. That being said, we're going to have to build and retrofit some infrastructure for sure. So we're talking millions and millions of dollars regardless.
Mm-hmm.
And that might strike people as a scary number, but consider that every bus driver sitting on Bears Road is getting paid regardless of whether he or she is moving a bus.
Mm-hmm.
So because so much of the operational costs are driver salaries, operator salaries, every amount of transit priority we can put in will save us money down the road on operations. So we don't know what those numbers are. We're not going to pretend to. But at some point, you know, you can probably make a pretty good argument that your return on investment will be fairly good because if you're running a lot of service, then you're going to be saving money as those buses run faster. And the other thing is, you know, people say, oh, the choke points, they're terrible. They're terrible. We can't do anything transportation-wise in Halifax because of the choke points. It's very, very difficult to increase car capacity much because it takes up an enormous amount of space. But with these five or six choke points I've named, if you get the buses or the trains or whatever we end up using past those choke points, then the whole system moves much better. Everything else improves. So we have to target a much smaller amount of space. It actually helps us out because we have these priority points that we really can look at. And after we sort those out, you know, we can look at Quinpool Road. We can look at Roby Street. We can look at some of the next steps to really make it. But as to a number, I wish I could give you some, but we are volunteers and we only have so much expertise. So
yeah.
You know.
Well, to that
point,
go ahead.
Okay, what we'd really like to see this the priority idea is feed into the political debate of how much space should go to cars versus buses, especially, but also the technical debate, which city staff is looking at how to do this, and we're saying these are some really key corridors. You know, where are you with this? Have you looked at, you know, potential to do things on the Fairview Overpass, for instance? So kind of to guide the debate and to guide the technical recommendations would be really what we're interested in doing.
Mm-hmm. You're listening to Habitat on CKDU 88.1 FM in Halifax. I'm your host, Erica Butler. That was the first part of my conversation with Sean Gillis of It's More Than Buses, a group that's just released a proposed transit network redesign for the city. The proposed new design is definitely bold, proposing to shrink our transit coverage in favor of a system that is fast and reliable in a core network. Here's part two of my conversation with Sean Gillis. How much did you delve into the nitty-gritty with this proposed network? Like, do you have timetables and schedules? And, like, do you know that, I mean, do you have, I guess, like, how much detail have you gotten into knowing that, running this bus on 10 and 15 minute frequencies will mean that we can do these pulse points here? And, how into the nitty gritty did you get?
Well, the scheduling we really can't do because, I mean, you require a huge amount of kind of computer resources. And if you want to do a good job of that, you also have to start looking at scheduling breaks and moving different buses in and out. One of the things I guess I would point out is I was running through this and just to look at how many physical buses you might need to run this service, we would need, I think, 150 all-day buses. Metro Transit has over 300. So there's lots of vehicles in place, but the scheduling we haven't really done. The pulse points, as long as you can key in on which pulse point you want to get to and kind of routes are terminating at that point, meaning the feeder routes, then just build the schedule starting at that pulse point. And wherever it happens to end up out at, the suburban areas of Portland Hills, for instance, your pulse point is really what you focus in on. So you'd build your high frequency schedule first and then build the pulse points out from that because they're dependent on it. So the high frequency networks aren't dependent on the pulse points. The pulse points are dependent on the high frequency network, if that clears it up.
Mm-hmm. Now, you guys started working on this plan right around the time that Metro Transit announced it was going to be revamping its system. Why did you decide to go ahead, working on this proposed network, even though Metro Transit had announced that they were also going to revamp the network?
Partly because I'm a big dork and I enjoy this. That's the first answer. More pragmatically, though, is I guess to back up a little more. In 2011, we did our kind of big push of public engagement, 3 meetings, and talked to a whole lot of people, transit users, non-transit users. And we came up with our essential elements of high-quality transit. And those have really fed into all the work we've done since. And this is just a really detailed idea of how that could play out in Halifax. But to answer your specific question, why did we feel the need to go ahead and do this? We agreed with all of the high-level principles that Metro Transit put in place for their major review, but we weren't given a clear answer if a high-frequency network in the urban core was going to be an outcome. Most of their principles suggested that was the preferred outcome, but we didn't know it. And so we really wanted to show people that it was possible at a very high level. This concept can work. And I really believe that we've done that. We have a reasonable amount of service, a good amount of connectivity, and major suburban corridors are taken care of. So we think we've got a solid case to say that this can be done in a viable way. So the other thing is that just because Metro Transit says they're going to do something doesn't mean it's going to pass muster with council necessarily. So the principles are in place, let's say, and let's say that they came back in January with something almost identical to what we have, and the public freaks out. You'd hear a lot of pushback from people who are losing service in some cases or having service move 7 blocks over from where it's, very close to their house now. And the argument would be that the current system doesn't really serve the broader public or many users very well. And from a utilitarian point of view, these changes that are negative for you will be much better for the city and most riders. In a political environment, that argument is very difficult to make if you don't have a strong group saying, we value the alternative. We need the change from the status quo for these big reasons, and some people are going to lose in this. We can't lie about that. There are some people that will have less service or different service that they, currently value. But overall, the system is underperforming in some dramatic ways, and this is a response to that. And we and our allies value these good things in our network, higher frequency and the ability to easily transfer to many destinations. So we really need a voice to make sure that this change really happens. And every time we talk to people, without a map, without something to start the discussion, it was just too abstract.
Yeah, well, it's interesting because I feel like, I'm personally, like I mentioned, the kind of user of the transit system I am would only probably benefit from this network. But it is one of those things where all the users of the current network are used to the current network and familiar with it. And this is a pretty dramatic change from the current network.
Absolutely.
And so you're kind of in a position of saying you want to, as opposed to giving something to people, but you are offering advantages, but you're also taking away. And so it's an interesting decision-making point for people, because we're going to have to say, this is what's reasonable. We're going to have to give up X in order to get Y.
Absolutely. And that's one reason why I'm really heartened actually by the discussion that people are having around this, because even when someone comes up and says, oh, I'm losing my bus, you know, why are you doing this? You know, we can say, well, we're focusing on the really, really core routes. We're really focusing. And we do have that 25% pot to put other services out there, but this is very dramatic. But it is a value judgment, and that's a much better conversation to be having than really getting down into the nitty-gritties of routes, because the nitty-gritties about routes and the vehicle that will be on them or that type of thing, it's not a great political discussion to have, because it turns into a fight of, oh, well, so-and-so's got this route or so-and-so's got this route. So this does speak to the really important principles. And I would say that one of the key principles that Metro Transit is going on is focusing on high ridership services, getting lots of people on the bus. And we've taken that pretty far. You know, this is really focusing on that. So, you know, the political decision to really where to drop on that spectrum, there's still going to be lots of discussion, but we've thrown it out there and said, you know, if you really want to go here, this is what you can accomplish. And there would be some people who, you know, aren't going to necessarily gain from that. But at least now we can have a discussion about, okay, what are the real trade-offs, you know, or potential trade-offs, because this is absolutely a proposal that, well, we'll see where it goes, you know?
One of the things that I wanted to ask you about is Metrolink and community transit. We have different tiers of service now. I mean, it sort of goes to the mentality of how you improve transit in Halifax right now is you can only add something. You cannot take something away, which I think is sort of the mentality that both councillors and the bureaucracy that manages the system have, that we can't really change something. We could add layers to it.
Yeah.
Does Metrolink and community transit exist in this system, or how did I notice that Metrolink doesn't appear to be part of it. So how does that work?
Yeah. Well, the Metrolink, which is currently the Portland Hills and the Sackville link, I think this is my opinion, but I think it could be very easily included in our network. If you look, we have a Penhorn Portland corridor that terminates in downtown Halifax. So the corridor is still there. So in peak hours, just simply run a bus that goes Portland, Penhorn, Bridge, downtown, and call it the Portland Hills Express. And you basically have the Metrolink service. Sackville, you can do a similar thing. Sackville, Cobequid, Sunnyside, boom, Cogswell. So the existing Metrolinks could work, and I think they are very valuable. They've shown they can work. I guess one of the things is branding them as a separate service just adds one more layer of complexity. And the other issue with branding them as a separate service is they run, I think, every hour throughout the day. There's already tons of buses that go along the Portland corridor, but because people have been told Metrolink is their bus in this very confusing network, we now feel obliged to run this bus and overlap even more. And Sackville, kind of similar idea. So I think we haven't shown it on here, but there is kind of that 25% pot, or people could say, well, we don't need XYZ route. But the idea of express routes overlapping our existing kind of high frequency network in the peak hours would address the Metrolink issue. The kind of farther afield rural issue, I think we should really have a discussion about what they're supposed to do. They do provide a very useful service in that they get a lot of people out of cars. And that's all well and good. But we should point out that they come at a very high cost. The Metro X routes to Tantallon, Porter's Lake, and the airport are the most heavily subsidized routes in the system on a per-rider basis. So if we're trying to get the most people out of cars, do we want to focus on Tantallon, where it's very expensive to service, or do we want to focus on Fairview, where it's very inexpensive to service, and there's still lots of drivers who could switch over? So that's one thought. Now, realistically, I think that there will be services like that continue. They've been very, very popular. And the Metro X, the really rural commuter services, do provide something useful for sure. So I think what the discussion we should have instead is how much can we reasonably subsidize these from the general pot of Metro Transit? If it's going to cost $6.50 every trip to subsidize these, can we run bigger buses to get more people on the bus and drive the cost down? Can we have fewer departures to, again, get the cost down? And can we look at a higher fare to bring the cost down? Can we look at an area rate to bring the overall subsidy down? So I think the focus on those routes, the core rural express routes, if you will, should be on the cost per rider, because right now it's very, very high. And from the cruel utilitarian standpoint that we've kind of taken with this, we have to think about every dollar we spend and how we can most benefit the most number of riders. The community transit routes, so those would be your, I guess, Sambro Loop and Beaver Bank, they go into a category that we would describe as a pure coverage route. Your goal is to really serve people who need travel. They need to come in for appointments, for doctor's office, to visit people, and those serve a very, very important community function. So again, the discussion shouldn't be, do we have these type of routes, but it's how much can we spend per person, and when should they travel, and how often, and try to really maximize their benefit. And for a more concrete example right now, I'm just going to hop on the internet and verify this, but I'm pretty sure that the Sambro Loop bus only runs in rush hour. So what that says is, it says, oh, well, rush hour is really important. We're going to get people coming into town. But if you have a car, the Sambro Loop takes you all the way around the Sambro Loop in one direction. You're probably not going to make that choice. So could we run those buses outside of peak hours when it's cheaper to run them and still provide that very important social service? So we really have to look at how and why we run those buses. And yes, the Sambro Loop does only run really in peak hours. It doesn't run through the middle of the day. And in the middle of the day, you've got all your buses sitting around anyways.
Right. So you're saying if it's seniors in Sambro that we need to, you know, give access to, you know, recreational opportunities in the city or something, then maybe rush hour is not the time to be running those buses.
Maybe not. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And I mean, you could look at the same thing in Beaver Bank, there's the one that goes out the South Shore. And the other thing is that one of the things we're moving away from is providing what Halifax Transit offers right now is fixed route service. So a bus comes at a set time every day at a specific stop. And in very, very low demand situations like rural areas, dial-a-rides, where the bus runs kind of a core route along, we'll say, the number 7 highway, but can deviate its routing a bit to pick up different people and get to different destinations. When you have really low demand, you can provide door-to-door service in some cases at a little lower cost. So we should be really looking at different options, because the fixed route coming every hour, every 2 hours, whatever, after a certain level of density, the kind of rural or very, very suburban, it's not your most cost-effective option. And if you're trying to serve people with mobility issues, maybe you want to give them the option of getting a little bit closer by deviating that route a bit. So there are potentially better options in the Sambro Loop to look at, and there's better models that are also available, looking at community-based transit organizations that use more volunteer and different operating models. Because running a transit system is really, really, really expensive with professional unionized drivers. And with all of the maintenance associated with that, you got to bring every bus into Burnside for an oil change. So there's a huge amount of overhead costs. Whereas if you're running 4 or 5 vans around St. Margaret's Bay Peninsula, you might get a little better service for a lot less cost. So I really think we need to look creatively in the rural areas. And this is not a Halifax-specific problem. I mean, all across the province, there really needs to be a rethink of how we are going to deliver the very low-density transit services, which are We're not saying they're not important, not at all. You know, for those socialization, for getting people to basic services, for equity, they're very important, but does a Metro Transit bus best serve their needs at a reasonable cost? And I think that's entirely a good conversation to have, because quite frankly, I don't live in Sambro. I don't know what they need. Mm-hmm. I don't think that a route like they currently have is what they really need, but I don't know that. So, you know, can we do things differently?
You're listening to Habitat on CKDU 88.1 FM in Halifax. I'm your host, Erica Butler, in conversation with Sean Gillis of It's More Than Buses. In the final part of our conversation, we find out a bit more about the politics of a bold new transit strategy. Here's the third and final installment of my conversation with Sean Gillis of It's More Than Buses. Do you think that this proposed new network will increase the number of people in Halifax that use the bus on a regular basis?
Absolutely.
Have you included in your estimates for how much of our current budget this will take up? Have you included growth in ridership and revenue, or is that just a bonus if we can get that?
That's just a bonus. And I would say that there's significant evidence from other jurisdictions that when you increase frequency, you get more riders. Not just more people riding the bus because there's more buses, but you get a higher number of people using the bus. And I gave the example of the Route 7 when it went from 15 minutes all day when it went to 15 minute all day service. There was a 20% increase in ridership over 2 years on one of the busiest routes in the system. So that's pretty significant, 20% growth. Are we going to get that everywhere? No, we're not. But that is just a bonus, you know. If we get more revenue, that's on top of more efficient operating. And Jarrett Walker, who is a transit advocate and a transit consultant, he visited Halifax, and when he spoke with us at our initial events in 2011, and also lots of the ideas that he's put into his book, he really says if you follow basic principles, high frequency, fast travel, reliable travel, traveling in a straight line on major corridors, then you'll get more ridership. Mm-hmm. And if you look at our current route network today, we're just not doing that. Like, our routes loop all over everywhere to try to get a little bit of service to everybody. There's very few that have been designated as we're going after ridership. You know, we're focusing on the main avenue corridor and we're getting them a really good bus to a bunch of good destinations via some transfers. So we've never really tried that. So all of the available evidence and of the expert opinion, if will, suggests that you will get more ridership, because people being rational, if you provide them with better options at a decent cost, we'll give it a try.
Halifax Transit recently has made some announcements that could be interpreted as reneging on a commitment for a network redesign. I'm not going to say 100% either way, because these things are always sufficiently vague as to not be able to pin them down. But if this is a reneg on that commitment for a network redesign, what is the next move for It's More Than Buses?
We have talked to Halifax Transit, and what they've said is this is not a reneg on a system design, that we're still looking at a very, very significant overhaul with completely different routes and potentially different types of service. So at this point, we're going to take their word on it. That being said, the concerning thing is we just don't know how much that means, because where are they considering high frequency corridors? How many? Where do they think that transfer-based model can work and where can't it? So if that doesn't happen, I guess our next step is to become much more political and start asking council to really take over this process again. Because council directed them to do a full overhaul. And so, yes, it was a vague report. I read it. I'm not 100% sure what they're doing. And so we're going to I guess the next step would really be ask council to take this over and get some clear answers. You know, what are you doing? Do we have to push you back on a track, or can we say, okay, there was some details that we didn't really fully understand, and we'll kind of now agree that everyone's still doing a big full review. And I guess the other thing is Metro Transit said, Halifax Transit, whatever you want to call them, they said that they're not doing a transfer-based network everywhere. You know, our municipality is too big to do high-frequency service to all the really important destinations. And I guess my response would be, well, we've never really pushed for that. We understand that this only works in certain areas. So in some ways, they're just moving back to a position that might be a little closer to ours. But again, that question of where do they think high-frequency works, where do they think a high-frequency network can go, we just don't know. So for now, we're going to take their word on it. And in January, we'll know for sure when they get a network out. So, but I guess if I could have a message for council, it'd be really ask the questions. The people deserve to know where this is going. And to sit there as a counselor and say, well, I'm confused, that's not good enough. Ask for the clear questions about what type of service they envision and what type of network we can expect. Doesn't have to be a full detailed network, but where can we put what type of services? And so I think, you know, council's next step is to really inform themselves and get some clear answers for us, because they're just not there right now. So
mm-hmm. Are you worried that council won't have the political fortitude, I guess, to actually make this change? Because this, I mean, it's one thing for It's More Than Buses to, you uh-huh. know, talk to people and present your map. People aren't threatened by you. But when the city presents a map, backs will be up. Even before anyone's seen the map. They're in for a much tougher fight, I would think. How much faith do you have that our current slate of politicians in city council has what it takes to actually make this sort of bold move?
I would say if we just let them kind of continue on as things are going, not a huge amount. One of the reasons that we're out with this map and we're in public, we were at Switch. The message is really for people, if you believe in these ideas, and you don't have to agree with us 100%, but if you think that this is a decent direction to take, then call up your counselor, email them, call Metro Transit, tell them, stick to it. You know, we have to make some changes. And we're not advocating that this is the map. This is a map we do believe in. We think this is a really good starting point for discussion, and a lot of these ideas could work, but it's the principles behind it. High-frequency corridors, transit priority, the ability to transfer to many more destinations, and also focusing on where you can really get riders. That's the key thing. And that behooves Metro Transit to do a very significant redesign, to tear up a lot of routes and really, in some places, start over from scratch. So for listeners out there, call your counselor. Email them. Make sure that they know that there are people out here. Don't just be the silent majority. Because a lot of people that we talk to say, this is great. This would really benefit me. And so we need to keep that pressure up between now and January so that this happens. And whatever comes out in January, maybe we'll be very pleasantly surprised and say, hey, this is some pretty good stuff. You know, we can chat about making it better, but this is really where we want to go. But, you know, we can't expect to win a fight like this if we wait until January. We have to demand that this is followed through, because they're drafting a network right now, you know?
Mm-hmm. Do you, and this might be a difficult question for you to answer honestly, but do you have faith that we have the required expertise at Halifax Transit to come up with a good, solid, forward-thinking like plan?
I think we do. These guys have been, we should congratulate them for what they have done for the good. They've recognized a year or two ago that they were putting way too many resources in the far-flung areas that weren't really generating a good return. And so since then, they've put resources back into routes like the 10, the 52, the 7, and the 1 that have lots and lots of riders and are kind of chronically late. So they've been trying to do as much as they can operationally to address those issues. So that's good. Another initiative they undertook recently was the Portland Corridor, where they took all of the overlapping buses on Portland and scheduled them together so that they run every 10 minutes instead of just coming in clumps. So they've been moving in this direction, but at some point you just run into the sheer complexity of our network and say, well, we can't do this piecemeal. We've got to do it. So I think the technical expertise is there, and you know, we're more than happy to help them have solid discussions, to offer our input when we can, and also, you know, if something comes back and it's not quite where we want it to be, to have that discussion of, you know, how can we improve things. So I do think the technological expertise is there. It's just the political will to get things done is very important. And Metro Transit knowing that, well, they know they're going to get people upset. They have to know that there's also people out there that support change. And so that's where this kind of current round of political advocacy is really what we're looking to do.
All right. I have one quick question before I let you go.
Absolutely.
You mentioned the that you guys, this network is based on 500 meter spacing for stops?
500 meter stop spacing, yeah. And a little larger in some of the suburban areas, yeah.
Okay. And what is the current spacing? It seems kind of willy-nilly.
Yeah, as far as we can tell, it's pretty willy-nilly. There's some as close as, I think, 150 meters on Spring Garden, North Street. A general stop standard in North America is about 250 to 300 meters.
Oh,
and I think smaller than that.
So this, your proposed network, though, is a little, like, it has larger stop spacing than is average.
Yes.
Okay.
Well, because we've said we're focusing, you could call our stop spacing like rapid transit style stop spacing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the idea that we want to increase speed by spacing mm-hmm. the routes out, mm-hmm. or spacing the stops out, excuse me. And so there's pretty significant literature in North America. And if you go to kind of Jarrett Walker's humantransit.org site, there's discussion of stop spacing and walking distance. But you might lose a couple people because they won't walk as far. But essentially, you'll gain a lot more people because the surface is so much better. That's the kind of utilitarian argument that we're putting forward. Again, the difficulty that we don't deny, you know, we're not trying to hide this. It's that there are people that have mobility issues or who are older that do have some concerns about this. So there is that trade-off for sure.
Yeah, it's an interesting argument because, like, as you say, it's like a utilitarian approach versus what you set out to achieve.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. Mm-hmm.
And I guess I would make the argument for wider stop spacing and really well-defined high-frequency corridors. In the long term, if we successfully brand these as the high-frequency routes where you can expect good service all day and through, you know, decent hours into the evening and on some weekends as well, then over the long term, this will affect where people live if they want good transit service. Because right now, without really a hierarchy of routes, people say, I want to live next to a bus. Well, there's five or six that are really, really, really useful for a lot of people and a bunch that are just kind of, you know, not as useful. So people will start making decisions to live closer to these stops, to live closer to these high frequency lines. And that will mean that developers and people that rent, you know, people that rent units will start noticing that and they'll start putting more stuff. Part of it is we just have to build better communities where you can easily put the stuff that people need closer to them.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very, very big conversation about how we build communities. And this is one small part of it. And, you know, getting there, that might be difficult because, you know, over the couple of years transition where people are trying to decide where should I be, you know, am I going to move around a little bit to get this good transit service? Then it could be very difficult. But, you know, the long-term goal has to be to really just provide a better community for people to easily travel around in. And we think that this is a very important part of it.
Hmm.
It's not just buses for the sake of buses. It's much more than that. It's a community that's easy to travel around and get to the things you need.
In your research, did you come across any other cities that made sort of a dramatic change in their system?
The one that we usually cite is Portland, Oregon. And they started making this high-frequency network idea sometime, I believe, in the 80s or 90s. And it's an idea that's really spreading primarily because of Jarrett Walker. He's kind of the transit guru at this point on network design and on the principles behind it. And if you go on his website, there's actually a very diverse list of cities that are looking at high frequency principles. And they're as big and car centric as Houston, and then they're as kind of eco-friendly and walkable as Portland. And so, you know, it's an idea that has a lot of potential, for a lot of cities, as long as you have routes that can hit that 15-minute frequency. And I think Halifax does. I mean, we're really blessed with some places in the city that are really, really good for transit. We just have to take advantage of them. It's a really big topic. Like, people know that there's big problems. So that's, we wouldn't be having these conversations if people were really, really happy with the system.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
well, it's
there wouldn't
true.
Be the interest. So
yeah. Thanks so much, Sean. I really appreciate you telling me about this today.
Yeah, no problem. That's really glad to do it. And just got to keep in mind that the way to make this happen is to make sure the politicians and the leaders know that this is very important to a lot of people. So don't be afraid to call or email your counselor.
You've been listening to Habitat on CKDU 88.1 FM, habitatradio.ca, and rabble.ca/podcasts. Got feedback on the show? Call the CKDU feedback line at 494-8041 or email habitat@ckdu.ca or check us out on Twitter at Habitat Radio. I'm Erica Butler. Thanks for listening. Habitat.